Oh, guys, I am so excited. I had no idea that Chevy Chase was in a New World Pictures movie. Like, you guys know, I've been a big Chevy Chase. I mean, Ryan, you and I were big Chevy Chase fans growing up.
Yeah,
And
but
I
Mark,
mean, we went and saw Funny Farm in the
no,
theaters,
Mark,
and
no,
I don't remember liking it that much when it
no,
came
no,
out,
Mark,
but I.
this is the Funny Farm,
Like I
not
said, Funny Farm. So he's a sports writer. He moves
nope,
out to
it's not
Vermont with his
no,
wife. It's
nope,
like it's all
not
the
this one, not this
wackiness
movie, Mark,
ensues.
not this
It's
movie. I'm sorry, we got to talk about this is the Funny Farm with Howie Mandel. So,
how it wait, so not the not Funny
not
Farm with
Funny
Chevy
Farm.
Chase. Oh guys, I gotta watch a different movie.
Oh, yeah.
Should
Okay.
we do this later?
Yeah.
Oh,
Maybe
well,
I
we'll just pause for you for 90 minutes
okay,
and
cool.
Yeah.
Cool,
We'll
cool.
wait.
I'll be right back. All right. Okay. All right. See you guys. See ya. All right. Bye guys. Good to watch
Oh.
it. Bye.
Yeah. I mean, oh, he's music.
Pictures podcast, where we're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
I mean, Funny Farm would have been better if it was like a sequel from Fletch, because he was a sports writer, but couldn't he have been an investigative writer? And then it would have been like a Fletch sequel, right?
And Erica.
We're going to have to keep it tight tonight, guys. I only got a hot five for this podcast. It's a tight five. It's a hot five, but it's, I don't have more than five tonight. That's it.
That's better.
That's it.
Some only have a hot two.
That was my nickname in high school.
Ew.
Oh, no. What a terrible reputation. Anyway, we are in the throes of Ha-Ha-August. We're talking about all the comedies released by New World Pictures. And joining us for this episode is a returning guest. She is a writer and a performer, and now a stand-up comedian. Welcome back, Allie Davis. Oh, Allie. Oh. I mean, all I can say is the selections we have given you for this podcast. You're welcome. You're welcome. You have joined us for such...
Have you wronged us in some way, Allie, that we're trying to seek revenge on you?
I think that was like maybe a past life thing, that I've murdered all of you in different ways.
Come on. Cover Girl Models, Godzilla 1985, Up from the Depths. I mean, and now this. I mean...
And now this. I will say, like, something about a bad comedy erodes your soul more than like a bad horror movie or a bad event. Like, really just makes you think about just lying down on the floor for a while.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. We are talking. What movie are we talking about? Funny you should ask. We're talking about 1983's The Funny Farm. Not that funny farm.
If you think you've seen everything, hold on. It's getting raunchier at the Funny Farm as the comics get their act together. Starring Howie Mandel.
I think I just smell caca.
Maurice LaMarche.
Take a good look at me, boss. I mean stump collection.
Peter Aykroyd.
The movie Midnight Express. What about Midnight Express 2? He goes back. He tries again. He gets caught again. He was young. He was still really stupid.
Mike McDonald. And the manager, Eileen Brennan.
The chicken is start working here tomorrow night.
Really?
Yeah. Parking cars.
Strip time. Let's go. All of it off. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Work for me. Come on. Take it off.
All right.
could get your license revoked, you know.
Yeah, she is.
Here comes Dolly Parton, man.
It's planned madness as the Funny Farm comics take their act to the streets with one hilarious misadventure after another.
Are you mine?
Oh, my God!
Who's driving the car?
I'll see you back.
My impressions will be the same.
The whole world's their stage, and everyone in it is played for laughs.
A little traveling music, Michael.
No, I like it. It's good. A little tighter on the waist, but alterations will take care of that. Sleeves are a little long. That's no problem either. It's good. It's me. It's my look. I think it's very neat.
Bananas are funny.
No, there's another car rental agency in the city. We can get another car somewhere else. It's because I'm blind, right? Isn't it? It's because I'm blind.
If you're a comic who wants to be a star...
Well, it's a pleasure to be working at the,
Funny Farm.
Keep up your sense of humor and make it big.
Here comes Johnny.
At the Funny Farm.
Oh, me too. Me too, me too. Oh, my, my.
That's right, 1983's Funny Farm, not that Funny Farm, brought to you by Taco Land. Hungry for a late night bite, conveniently located across the street from the Funny Farm, Taco Land has the food you crave. Don't ignore us and go to some diner. We're across the street. It's so easy to get to Taco Land. Just walk across the street. That's right, I'll say it again. We're across the street. There's no weird reason to drive anywhere else. Go to Taco Land.
Would there be convenient, easily obtainable food at Taco Land?
There is! And yet.
It is an indictment on Taco Land that it is never open night. Ever.
No. Never it's open.
The worst How business bad plan. Are their tacos?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do want to say, I think you guys need to do, if you have a series of screenshots of us getting sadder and sadder as we listen to that trailer of just our,
oh yes,
just the life draining out of our faces. God.
Yeah. This movie was directed by Ron Clark in his directorial debut. Clark got his start writing jokes for comedians, much like the character of Sammy in this movie. And also, like Sammy, he did not ever take the stage himself as a comedian. I think that will play a part as we discuss the movie, because I think that's a crucial thing that we're lacking in this movie. But that led to Clark writing plays and writing for TV shows like the Smothers Brothers and the Steve Allen Comedy Hour. Steve Allen, who shows up in this movie very briefly.
That's how they got Steve Allen to be in this.
Yes, yes. before then, he goes on to co-write features like 1978's Revenge of the Pink Panther and the Mel Brooks film's Silent Movie, High Anxiety, and Life Stinks. This is his sole directorial debut because he would go... Mel Brooks!
Well, at the peak and the not-so-peak.
Yep. Mm-hmm. This is the only movie he would direct. He would go back into writing for television on shows like Silver Spoons and Moonlighting. But this is why he wanted to make this movie. He told the Vancouver Sun in March of 1983, I wanted to take a look at the life of the comedian and decided to do it about the new young comedians. There's been a real revival of comedy, and there must be 700 comics trying to make it in the US and Canada these days. Clubs have opened all over the country, and this is where I set the film.
Wow. So it was deliberately during that, that like explosion
that
in the 80s.
Big comedy boom in the 80s, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. This stars Miles Chapin, who previously to this had appeared in the film adaptation of Hair, and 1979's French Postcards, which was directed by William Huyck, who would go on to direct Howard the Duck, which we discussed in May during Mark's Miserable Marvelous May, where we ranked the 70s and 80s MCU. And also, Chapin was also in Howard the Duck as well. But Chapin plays Mark Champlin from Cleveland, Ohio. Of course, this was not the original name of the character. According to the Windsor Star, the original name of the character was actually Mark Chapin, which they decided was too close to the actor's name, Miles Chapin. So they changed it to Mark Chapman. One problem, that's the same name of the guy who shot John Lennon in December of 1980, which happens to be around the same time they shot this movie. So they had to go back in editing and change his name to Champlin, is not too far off, but you can see it. And when he gets off stage after he does his WASP routine, he has that like name tag on him. Now, not on stage, but once he goes through the crowd, I paused it and you can see it says Mark Chapman on it.
Oh my God.
So
so many omens for this movie.
So many omens.
Stop.
Ryan, I encourage you to find a hobby.
This is it.
Another hobby.
This is all I have at this point. The biggest star probably at the time, at least the time that they filmed this movie, was probably Eileen Brennan, who had just appeared in Private Benjamin, and which had earned her a Best Supporting Actress nomination. So she was probably the biggest star. The other biggest star would have been Jack Carter, who plays Vegas comedian Philly Beekman. The director, Ron Clark, I said he used to write jokes. He wrote jokes for Jack Carter, and Jack Carter then in turn introduced Ron Clark to an agent, and that's how he got rolling in selling jokes and then writing for TV. So, of course, paying it forward and bringing Jack Carter into his movie. Howie Mandel and Peter Aykroyd, who also performed their own material in this, so that was not written for them. They performed their own stuff. Those are their jokes, for better or for worse.
They are responsible.
They are responsible. Yeah. Which you can tell, because if you're like, did Ron Clark come up with Bobby? That's amazing. He gave you such a gift, Howie Mandel. No, it's his material. And actually, at the time, they were still both starting out. And Aykroyd had just appeared as a feature player on the fifth season of Saturday Night Live. So arguably, he was maybe somewhat a bigger star, sort of on the rise. Mandel had just appeared in the lead role in a movie that would come out in 1981 called Gas, which they were both in, as a matter of fact. Oh. Mandel had the lead.
Not that Gas.
Not the, that's right. Not the Roger Corman Gas.
Oh, I was just going to ask.
Yeah. It's not that one. Good job, Erica. Good job.
That was fresh off the dome for the first time ever, probably. So
really, I'm very impressed.
Mark your notes, everyone. Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Oh, as always, always recording in the New World Pictures Podcast Cafe. but this is before Mandel would get his break on St. Elsewhere. Though, by the time the movie does come out, he is in St. Elsewhere at that point. So that's why he is suddenly name above the title on the poster. He's one of the first names credited in the trailer, because all of a sudden he is now the bigger star. There's also another comedian who breaks out after this movie, sort of more quietly, and he's also included in the trailer, but Maurice LaMarche, who plays Dickie the Impressionist, he will go on to voice the Brain in Animaniacs and has enjoyed a long voice acting career, being in Futurama and just a ton of shows. So still working today. So he does a ton of voices. Here's where you can watch The Funny Farm. It is on Tubi.
Tubi.
And it is also on this Code Red Blu-ray as well. Yes, out of print.
But soon to be on eBay.
You can find it, though. Funny Farm Blu-ray. But that's where you can watch it.
You want the Blu-ray quality for Funny Farm. You do.
And what kind of extras all those commercials? There is an interview with Tracy Bregman.
Okay. All right.
So, yeah.
Fiend. Well, That is it.
But you know what? I personally feel I had a second where I was like, oh man, it only has an interview. And I'm like, for this movie, they actually got something. Yes, I mean, this movie that almost no one has probably heard about.
I think it's a bummer, though, that they don't have bloops. Come on. It's Funny Farm. Sure. You don't have bloops on your Blu-ray? I bet the
bloops were crazy.
Come on. Think about how many silly voices Howie did. Come on.
Oh, God.
Just raw, unedited Howie.
We never got to see him do any prop work with that hamburger helper purse that he always carried around.
Oh, God. Right?
I wanted to see the auditions of that long line of people, like the person in the chicken suit, right? And all the random people that lined up. Why didn't we have all the just a montage of those auditions?
Well, and we need to talk about that, because this movie doesn't seem to have any sense of what is or isn't actually funny. And like, there's a line where he says, a guy in a chicken suit, how can I top that? And that seems to be sincere.
That is deep comedy.
I think it is supposed to be a funny line, but it is said so dryly that like, did you mean that?
Yeah.
Did you? Like,
yeah.
Are guys in chicken suits funny? Right. Question mark.
Yeah, I think that's supposed to be a like, I can probably compete with him because he's in a chicken suit. But like the line of that, where that's funny is, again, Ron Clark wrote comedies, wasn't a comedian. So it's a very, it's very representative in this movie that, I mean, I feel like learning was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Like I wrote comedies, but I'm not a comedian. But here's a movie about comedians, which I never was.
Hold on. George Lucas wrote Star Wars. He's not a fucking astronaut.
He is a Jedi, though.
I mean, Ryan, come on.
He is a Jedi master. You didn't know that?
Right.
Oh, my God,
Martin Scorsese does mobster movies, not an actual mobster. I mean, I don't know so how to actually...
I don't know. Only mobsters can pull off glasses that thick.
That's fair. But I'm just saying, you don't have to actually be in the profession to know how to make a movie about a profession, right?
No, but I think it helps.
Star Wars would have been way better if George Lucas was an actual astronaut.
It's like John Glenn had made it.
Okay, that's fair.
Hey, Lance Armstrong, do you look at this script? I just want to make sure everything's on the up and up.
Wait, Lance Armstrong is doing it? Is it about biking now?
Neil Armstrong, my lord.
He did so many steroids that he would occasionally launch himself into orbit.
He did so many steroids, he was on the moon in a fashion.
I do remember the dark side did support Livestrong, so you're probably right about that.
Yeah, all those blood transfusion scenes really make sense now. Yeah. Okay, yep. Got it.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about what this movie is about. Mark, let's start with you. What is Funny Farm about?
Okay, Mark Chapman, Champlin, what? We'll go with Chapman for shits and giggles.
Let's say Champlin, not Mark Chapman, John Lennon.
Mark Champlin is an aspiring stand-up comic who gives up everything to make it big in the City of Angels. That's right, Quebec. But Mark quickly discovers the struggle is real when he manages to build a pretty okay life for himself. His life is turned upside down when he gets a regular spot at the Funny Farm, finds a girlfriend, and gets a pilot, all in a matter of days. Sometimes, you need to cast your dreams aside in order to face the grueling reality of immediate, moderate success.
So true. Oh, man. Faced that too many times. Allie, what is the Funny Farm about?
It's an important two major plots. One is about a pair of suspenders that are perfectly happy in Cleveland, and then they are yanked most of the way across the country, and they almost get to go back home, but then they don't. And then the other one is a very happy story about a woman who has no thoughts, hopes, dreams, or aspirations of her own. She just wants to be the wind beneath a comedian's wings, and she gets that.
I mean, it is so wonderful to watch your dream get fulfilled like that.
Yeah, I felt really good for that rich character. Yeah, really
toss me away like a piece of garbage because you're sick of the city, and then come straight back into my arms.
Mm-hmm. You can come back. Why not? Why would I object?
Of course. Mm-hmm. Erica, what is the Funny Farm about?
I think it's interesting that's what the two of you got out of this movie. Because I think I saw something totally different. I mean, to me, this movie was the story of the struggle of being a fruit juggler on the streets.
Yep.
1 minute, you're entertaining a crowd, collecting a couple of bucks, making people laugh, pretending a green pepper is an apple. I mean, the next minute, you're sitting front row, meeting a new friend at a comedy club. But it's all about being in the right place at the right time. Had that fruit juggler stayed, could the story have been different? Could he have fallen in love with the waitress at the comedy club?
Yeah.
Guess we'll never know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm, sliding doors. Could have had a whole of it. Yeah. Well, for me, I felt like this was just like a lesson, you know, that sometimes you just need to pack up all your stuff, put it in your car, and then do a 10-minute set in Barstow to realize that middling success is just fine after all.
But make sure you do that drive with a Kleenex box so prominently displayed on your dashboard.
You never know when you need it. You never know.
Right. Right.
I thought it was going to be a plot point because it was so
dead center prominent.
Frame.
Yeah. 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 So they suddenly got that Kleenex money to do some post production. Yeah. How did they fit that into the movie? Throw it in the dash. Well, let's get to the Letterboxd synopsis. Here is what Letterboxd had to say. And all I can say is I think they watched a different movie. But here we go.
Ooh.
The laughs are nonstop as a gang of ambitious young comics strives to make it. Young comics strives. Okay.
A gang strives. A gang of young comics strives.
Strives to make it in the exciting world of stand-up comedy. I don't even think a stand-up would call it an exciting world. That's okay. The stand-up comedy at the famous comedy club in L.A., The Funny Farm, a fictional comedy club that does not exist. These budding comedy stars are as crazy offstage as they are on. Guess who they start with? Miguel, America's funniest illegal alien. Remember Miguel?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Miles, who can't decide if he's a black comic or a comic who happens to be black.
That's
Bruce.
It says that in Letterboxd?
100% not a thing that is ever mentioned.
Not a thing that goes on.
Wow.
Bruce, whose manic act borders on insanity, and Peter, the intense political satirist. They've mentioned almost every ancillary character they had brought in the juggler.
And the guy Valley parking cars.
Right.
Then you would have had the whole
the third tier of stars in this movie. They completely leave out the main character. Totally. Here is the last line. The Funny Farm is a hilarious, insightful look into those who live the lives of comedians.
Insightful?
Insightful.
Hilarious, and insightful look into those who live the lives of comedians.
So not comedians. Insightful to those who live those lives.
They're just living the lives of comedians. They're not actual comedians. They're living the life of one. This is what a comedian would live like, and I'm living like it. But I'm not a comedian.
Weird.
Don't get me wrong.
That's very weird.
Very strange.
What a bizarre recap.
Yeah. Did they have access to some sort of like fan fiction routines to match those characters that actually fleshed out those descriptions?
I feel like they got as far as the trailer and they were like, well, these characters brought up in the trailer have to be significant in this movie.
Yeah.
They have to play a very large role.
This was like ChatGPT 1 when I wrote this. It wasn't quite at three or four yet.
ChatGPT only knows what we know. Okay. We can only spit out what we tell it. And somebody did not tell them what this movie was. Denied them what this movie was actually about.
Oh my God.
So we start off with a pretty decent sequence where we have Miles Chapin getting in his car, driving cross country, listening to, for a credit sequence for a New World Pictures movie.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah,
because
the opening scene for Bad Manners was just a close-up of a sprinkler shooting water.
I got lost in. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I got lost in that.
So I was Oscar goes to
which
the Funny Farm
opening. I got lost in this opening probably because it wasn't just titles over a black screen.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was thinking of my own cross-country trip to Chicago to go out and do improv. And listening to like the Second City CD that came with that book that they put out where they just did like sketches from throughout their history. And I completely listened to that on the drive out. I'm going to go to Chicago and I'm going to do improv comedy. So I had a certain kinship with this movie. I'm not going to lie. Okay.
Aww.
I kind of got into this movie just a little bit.
Did you also bring an oscillating fan with you?
I wish I had. I wish, looking back.
That humidity is no joke.
An oscillating sprinkler for the front yard? I wish I had. What did you guys listen to on your cross-country trips?
Driving out to Chicago, I specifically remember that for some reason, DJs in Indiana were obsessed with Paradise by the Dashboard Lights. No, not the, it was, not that. It was, I would do anything for love. But I won't do that. Like, that played maybe five times on my way across Indiana.
Oh,
and I thought, yeah, Indiana loves meatloaf.
That's the yeah, they sure do.
Yeah, in musical and food form, I should clarify.
Yeah, yeah, we knew what you were meaning.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's anything in loaf form.
Yeah.
Erica, did you listen to anything as you drove through Indiana to Chicago?
I mean, it only took me 5 hours to drive up there, and I was driving there memorable. With my parents, so I rode in silence. Because my parents don't listen to anything in the car. So it was 5 hours of silence.
Fair. I can verify that this is true of my in-laws. they do like a nice silence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Fill the car
like a
with
quiet
your thoughts.
Car. Quiet ride.
No quiet distractions. Ride. No distractions.
No distractions.
Watch for other cars.
Watching the
you.
Road.
Be safe. 10 and 2 all the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Erica, have you thought about doing a funny routine about how your parents are white and like silences and dignity? Because
it could be a huge groundspring of yeah. material. Who knows? Mark, did you drove cross country and moved
yep.
to the Midwest at some point? So
yep.
did you? What did you listen to?
The first time I went when I drove alone, I would just keep scanning the radio stations to just see what I would pick up, and
yep.
I wasn't looking to listen to anything specific. I just thought I would find a station, like a sports station or something, listen to that till it faded out, and then I would try to see what else I would find. Thinking that I was somehow tapping into local culture of whatever freeway I was on, but it was kind of fascinating to see what you would pick up at midnight in like the middle of Utah.
Yeah.
That's sure. That was essentially my anything for love was the result of that. Yeah. I also highly recommend doing that with AM radio if you're traveling at night across the United States.
Yep. It was all AM radio. That's all I was looking for. Yeah, not FM.
So don't want to get anything in stereo. Let's get it all.
No. I like mono.
It's pure mono across this great United States.
That sounds amazing, because I'll say, even though it was only 5 hours, it was a quiet, long 5 hours.
That is meditative. So that is very...
yeah.
Plenty of time to think about what you're doing.
Uh-huh.
Do you want to do this? Uh-huh. You're 100%?
Uh-huh.
I think my 26 hours was shorter than your 5 hours.
I think so.
Yeah. Like, gone a little bit quicker. So Miles drives to LA. He heads to the Comedy Tree, which is the comedy club he has moved cross country for, but it is burned down.
Okay. Point of order.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, I know it's that kind of, but like the whole point was that he's got his big break at the Comedy Tree, presumably because he's been doing comedy in Cleveland. But then like 6 hours later, he has no routine at all when he goes to the Funny Farm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that's interesting because I didn't think he had a routine. He was driving out there listening to George Carlin and Mel Brooks, and he's trying to put together his routine as he's heading off to his
like
first
he's ChatGPT,
right? He's like, what's all this preparation bullshit? I'll just get up there and wing it. Isn't that what you do?
Got hours in the car, I can just come up with something on my way. He does say at one point, he says that, you know, she said, how much material do you have? And he said, he's got like 3 routines, he said. And he said they worked in Cleveland or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I feel like his story changes.
Yes.
And again, maybe his big break at the Comedy Tree is in his head the whole time and he hasn't actually been invited by anybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
And well, there was no internet. There were phones. So that's funny. I mean,
right.
I guess theirs burned down and they just didn't want to go to the many payphones that would have been on the streets at the time.
Right.
But if you had some extra cash, 976 joke was always there for you. You could get a couple bucks a minute.
976 joke.
Yeah, I completely forgot
about
that. Holy
That
crap.
Is a memory unlocks.
I have told Eric and I's children about the fact that you could call a line and just hear the time. And they were like, looked at me as I would look as if I was like, I am from another planet. They were like, what?
No.
And
sometimes
why?
That was useful service. Just the thing that, just.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you needed it. Like you were like, the power went out. You're like, call and get the time.
So you what know time could going- it be? Hard to say.
And if you really yeah. wanted to hack the system, you would dial it, and as just as it connected, but like before it told you the time, you could yell in your phone number, and if someone else was on the line at that time, they could hear you, and they would call you back. And we would do this all the time. See, you just got random people calling you back because you yelled in your number.
That's amazing. I never knew that.
Wow.
And I called, was yours time and temp?
No.
Because when I would call, I would get the time and the temp. So I called it like crazy because I love knowing the temp. I felt like, oh, sorry, everybody. It's not 80 outside. It's 82 right now. So joke's on you. So I would call time and temp all the time.
Yeah. I think in San Diego, they were like, it would be just fruitless. They would be like, it's 70. We don't need to keep saying it.
They're like, hey, it's 3:15 and it's perfect out. Just, you know, mahalo. Yeah, talk to you later. Like, surf's up.
Now there are surf reports, Erica, on the radio. Every station had their own surf reports. Yep. That, you know, that's just the condition of the oceans, and that always does change. So,
Mother Ocean. Cool. That's your time and temp. Surf report.
That's right.
Or you could call 976 surf and get the surf report all the beaches in your area.
Yeah.
Wow.
It did cost $2 per call, by the way.
Like $2.19. Wow. Yeah. I want to caution anyone listening and with a time machine. 976 joke was like $2.1980 a minute, which so that's like $5 a minute.
It's a lot. Yeah. And if you called in for the surf report, they would be like, and Black's pretty glassy. We're looking at 3 or 4 beach break. Now here's a joke.
Ryan, for the listeners out there, though, what Ryan did up to the and here's a joke is exactly what they sounded like.
Well, I mean, I didn't grow
that's
up
amazing.
There.
Amazing.
Grew up there, Mark. All right, so he heads the comedy tree. He finds out that that's not the, it's burned down. He's immediately told by a street performer.
Oh, right. The Funny Farm. Anyway.
Then goes to the Funny Farm. And right. The movie. The thing we all agreed to talk about. He literally then runs into a waitress who will quickly become his girlfriend.
This guy has no challenges that last more than a couple of minutes.
Seriously. Yeah.
It's like watching a lost episode of Entourage where Vince just decides to become a comedian. And he's like, it's super easy. I ran into anybody and it all worked out.
Wow. Entourage. That's another memory unlocked. Remember when we were all super into Entourage?
Yeah, or you could call 976 Entourage and you could get the latest update on Entourage.
Man, Entourage had a real chokehold on all of us, didn't it, for a time there? Allie, no chokehold.
I have never seen an episode of Entourage.
Wow.
If you like TV shows devoid of any sort of tension, it is the show for you.
Correct.
It is correct. Basically like, show says once you become a big star, your life is fucking paved with gold. And
becoming a big star, not hard.
Yeah, it's just gonna be hot.
As long as you're handsome.
Be very attractive.
So,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
next time I have a migraine, maybe I'll try that one.
Perfect choice.
That's the letterbox description.
Yeah, that's right.
Have a blinding headache? Entourage.
Actually, they talk about Entourage, a show about a man named Turtle on Letterboxd. Like, wait, what?
I mean, Turtle is in it, but
I mean, he is part of the Entourage, but we are skipping over a few key players there. Anyway, so he meets his girlfriend Amy. She's played by Tracy Bregman, who was only about 17 at the time.
But
she'd
already
been on, she'd already been on Days of Our Lives for like 2 years. And she was in Montreal, Quebec, and had just shot Happy Birthday to Me. And so
seen that horror movie. I have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in fact, Jack Blum is also in Happy Birthday to Me as well. So both of them shot that. And so she went back to the U.S. and was immediately called, hey, you got the Funny Farm, so you have to go back. So
She didn't need this. If she had a show and she
had
just
left
in a movie.
Days of Our Lives. And I think she was trying to now start like a movie career. So she did Happy Birthday to Me, then did this. And then she goes back to LA and basically starts again in soap operas. And she's had a very long, successful career in soap operas.
Yeah.
A couple different ones. Bold and the Beautiful, Young and the Restless. She's just kind of done soaps the whole time.
Much like her character. Ones. She just wants to be a working actress.
She did her dream. She had to help this poor mediocre comedian first, but in doing so, she eventually gets her dream. And so he just rolls into LA right away, finds a club, mm-hmm. finds a girlfriend.
Comedians are not at all competitive with him.
Right.
Don't try to undercut him at all. No. They embrace him, love his act, really encourage
him. Support him, despite the fact that he is he doesn't have an act, as we talked about. But he is brought immediately to the restaurant where all the comics hang out. Now, I remember this when I was starting out and doing improv, and you kind of finally get to hang out with some of the people who have been doing this for a long time, like Allie Davis.
That's right.
And you're like, well, I got to play it cool. I'm hanging out with all the cool kids. And so you want to make sure that you make a good impression. Maybe you say something funny when it's appropriate, but if not. But what you don't want to do is try too hard, which is what happens here in clip one.
Hold it. Smile. Okay, hold on to that for 60 seconds. And if nothing develops, take 2 aspirin and call me in the morning.
He really captured you, Michael.
So, oof, that is a swing and a miss on that joke.
Here's the thing with that joke, though. By the time that joke appears in the movie, we've had 325 other equally bad, if not worse, jokes thrown at us. So one in the pyramid of jokes is actually towards the top.
Yeah, no, I mean, the thing is where it's placed. Like, we see, like, obviously edited up, chopped up pieces of Peter Aykroyd and Howie Mandel and Marjorie Gross as well, who would go on to write for Seinfeld. And so we get little tiny bits and pieces of their act. Unfortunately, I think in ways that don't particularly make them seem great.
They do not serve them or their act.
Doesn't serve them well. But I'm talking about the placement of where he does this joke. He's hanging out at another table. They're all hanging out. They're talking about something
near
different.
Them, not with
he
them.
He runs towards them, pulls out a napkin, pretends it's a Polaroid, kids. That's where a camera that the film would come out, and you'd have to wait for the picture to develop. That's the bit he's doing. It's out of nowhere. It doesn't make any sense of what they're doing. Then he thinks he's so clever and runs back to the table. That should have shut him down at this club. That should have been like, I don't care. I don't want that dude.
And you can't tell. Like, there have been so many bad jokes. Like, you can't tell if this is supposed to bomb or if they're supposed to be like, hey, he's got some chops. Like, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And it is so, he takes like the whole napkin dispenser with him. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
And the guy who gets the napkin, his hand in the napkin, turns around and makes the better joke out of it. Where he's like, he really captured you, which is like, that's the comedy. But I kind of felt like it showed like this guy is so green and he does not know what he's doing. He's desperately trying to impress these guys and does not know how.
Right. And they should be like, if he had done that and then they'd been like, oh, Jesus, that was cringy. And then shut him out for a while. That would at least...
had
be sort
something.
Of a thing that happens in a movie and in life, mm-hmm. and it's just completely not addressed.
and it misses him entirely. Any lesson he could have learned from that
right.
moment,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because eventually he does get up on stage, and he only does a set, and it only goes for like 2 minutes. But here's a bit of it.
So I walk across the street, and there's this flower shop. Right, the guy there is terrific. No smile, no warmth, no sense of humor. For a minute, I thought I was talking to my father. So I asked him if I could borrow the car keys. enough about that. Let me talk about my uncle.
Great segue.
Thanks, guy.
Now, again, this is another thing about, like... This kind of this.
I wouldn't be in the room when they did the VO of that one woman laughing.
Oh my god!
I think they actually do a decent job here of showing like how this isn't going well, and Miles Chapin does a good job of like even messing up the car keys punchline.
Yeah,
sort of deliberately like being bad, but like there is that element. That's where we get like the here's being judged by his fellow comedians.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I remember when I coached a team at Improv Olympic in Chicago, and I would look for a particular kind of out, and below is Craig Euler, which Mark doesn't know, but you guys know. And he used to watch the shows a lot too, or just happened to be there. And he would be drinking a drink. And if he thought I missed the end of their show, I was up in a booth with an open window, and he would like throw his like straw at me. You're like, oh, you missed it, you idiot. And I'm like, just wait for it. And then we would get the right ending. And I'll be like, there you go. That's the line. You know, but anyway, that's that. I just sort of like that moment too. Also, I really felt, I was like, just somebody, he's actually up on stage trying to do 2 minutes and you're giving him shit from the back of the crowd. Unreal.
I will say that, yeah, the car keys, they don't explain it, but like so much of stand up is the rhythm. And like, yes, yeah, he does blow that rhythm in a way, but why explain? Why address it? Why explain it? Why talk about it? Yeah.
Now, Allie, you recently did your first set. Did you not?
I had done some stand up, a very little bit of stand up, maybe 10 years ago.
Right.
And then I just did a set on Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, people often think this and they make this mistake because we all, most of us here did improv comedy, and everybody always says, oh, cool, where are you, like at the improv? Or they would talk like some sort of like comedy club.
The diabolically named improv. Yes.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Where no improv is really, unless you're doing crowd work, is actually happening. But yeah, I mean, you're like, no, I'm not a stand, but I do improv. And that those two roads are actually separate is always something to somebody from the outside is they don't quite understand.
Yes.
So those it doesn't two roads often are separate, happen. That, yeah.
And always in a fight. Yeah.
Right. So, but you've done a little stand up and now you're going back to it, which is great. So how did your first set going back to it? How did it go?
I was very happy with it. Thanks for asking. It was with a group of us had been in a workshop together, and this was kind of our show of like, here's what we did in the workshop.
Sure.
And cool. It went well. At my real friends came to the show and
yeah. And the people who you wronged, who are revenging you,
they murdered in a past life.
Right. Did any of these friends that came to see your show invite you on a podcast to talk about a movie no one's heard of?
They didn't. I know who comes out on top. Like,
but it did go well. That's great. So did you leave your tape recorder on the stage?
I didn't. Oh my God. You I made paid sure someone to videotape it. They're going to put me on TV in Detroit. Cincinnati.
Cincinnati.
Just question. Did your white Anglo-Saxon Protestant jokes just kill like you had hoped they would?
In a way, my entire 5 minutes was on Beowulf, so I guess I did kind of do wasp jokes, but like very proto-wasp jokes.
You didn't go right to the heart of it. You went around it.
I went around
it,
like, oh, we'll get there.
Talk about a subject that everybody was like, I get it. this is done on amateur night where he sort of gets to, you know, goes to that line where, again, we should have had like a nice montage of, as Erica suggests, of people that didn't make it or
yes,
tried to make
but
it.
But isn't
night.
Then, isn't every night amateur night? Cause they say there's always a line and like, I honestly couldn't tell if it was amateur night or just night.
It's true. Mondays. Who is the seasoned comedian and who isn't is
right. Yes. And then they will, although that has happened. Like I've been at, when I was doing like it's not uncommon for a more experienced comedian to drop in on a set where lesser experienced comedians are going up, but yeah, they don't, they're like, it's a hard line of Monday night's audition night and then it isn't, or there's a lot of like, oh, take her down and put that guy up, which I don't think right. happens very often.
Right. Not unless you're at the Funny Farm, but this amateur night is thrown off by comedian Bruce Nutter, who is played by Canadian comedian Mike McDonald, who would also appear in Mr. Nice Guy, which was released by New World Video. And he's also in the nearly New World movies Recruits, the sequel to Night Patrol.
Oh my.
And Loose Screws, aka Screwballs 2.
Oh my God.
McDonald talked about his casting in The Funny Farm to the Ottawa Citizen in October 1980, and he said, I've been looking for a good movie role for some time, and this one is it. He talked about how it was a bit more of a serious role in a comedic movie. Then the article goes down, and this is what the article says. Earlier this week, he, meaning McDonald, auditioned for a spot as a regular on NBC's revamped Saturday Night Live show. McDonald is willing to drop his upcoming movie role just to be a part of the highly rated comedy series. So like, he's like, oh, I've been waiting forever for this part, but also I'll dump it in it. If I can get on Saturday.
Wow.
I mean, correct. Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Smart move.
Yeah. Yeah. And wow. His role, what I didn't honestly, I think I read that this article after I'd seen it at least one time through. And it said that his role was originally written with Andy Kaufman in mind. I don't know if that meant that they wanted him to play it, but I think they meant that that was the type of comedian they were trying to showcase, which I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. But yeah. I didn't get that from what he, because everyone's like, oh my God, this guy's crazy and insane. I'm like, I don't know. He plays a bongo drum and he gets girls on stage. And he takes photos of them. And then he brings the crowd out into the cold night.
Right. But which I like. Bringing the crowd outside, was that an old Steve Martin bit, wasn't it? Or am I...
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
It reminded me of The Family, how they would do that kind of thing, where they would have a bit where they would go outside, and they had a bit where Adam McKay would pretend to jump off the roof, and he said he was going to do it, and then they would throw like a dummy off the roof. Anyway, I may be telling that story badly, but it did remind me a little bit of that shenanigans where people are like, let's get everyone outside. But yes. I didn't get that Andy Kaufman feeling. Did you guys?
Now that you say it, I can connect the dots of like, this guy is so weird that maybe, I mean, that's a weird, like, maybe he's actually mentally ill, which is such an 80s yes. thing to think is funny. But like, and then is he actually planning to commit suicide? Spoiler, like it's very strange.
And he's a comedian
It makes wild turns from like the wackiest pranks ever. Man, being a comedian is the saddest, most serious thing you could possibly do.
Yeah, for sure.
It does.
And if he was really trying to be an Andy Kaufman type, it would have been like, you could have then very easily done where he's purposefully bombing on stage, which was like a common Andy Kaufman bit.
Right.
You could just just mimic that. But just being wacky and crazy doesn't. Like, I can connect the dots, Allie, like you said, but, you know, you shouldn't have to tell me that.
Right.
Like,
yes.
I should have been able to connect.
This is no, like, really, no criticism on Mike McDonald here, because I think he just, his comedic persona is not Andy Kaufman, which was very, very like, character-based. He would come in with a certain kind of character, whether he would be aggressive, whether he would be really timid. You know, whatever he was going to do, whether he'd be quiet and just play like a record or whatever he was going to do. But that's not what he does. So if you're going to cast somebody in a role that does that, you need somebody that's their thing. However, I should say, maybe not for us, but for the Los Angeles Times review of The Funny Farm from May of 1983, they said McDonald simply commands the comic stage.
Wow.
Oh.
So
that was also the last review that guy ever wrote.
Yeah. Well, and I do like, again,
it worked for somebody.
For those of you who similar, if you were too old to understand 976, like there was a point in the 70s and early 80s where impressionists were huge and people would make their voice sound a little like someone else and people be like, mind blown, amazing and hilarious. And like,
yeah. That's true.
Luckily, we've evolved far from that these days. Yeah, I think there's a lot of impressionists that are simply... The joke is often just, here's the voice.
Here's how much I sound like that. Yeah.
And they don't have a joke there, per se.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that's somewhere like where sort of impression comedians can be kind of somewhat performative. But I think that Maurice LaMarche... Maybe at least in this movie, he's portrayed more in that fashion. But I've seen him do certain things, like he learned that Orson Welles peas commercial
recorded,
and he would just listen to it, and just learned how to imitate the entire. And he will do this at like conventions and stuff, and he will just play the whole thing, not just Orson Welles, but the other people.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And he would just do that as like a vocal warm up, where he would just do all the voices of that commercial. And it's, I don't know if that's exactly what you're saying. That's not exactly any jokes, but just playing the thing out, which just is just joy. Fascinating. Yeah. But yeah. But yeah, his Johnny Carson was fantastic, and he only uses it in one section. And it's like they talk about how good his Carson is, and then he uses it for one small moment. And I'm like, man, wish they had thrown him, because his Carson was also impressive.
He did the impressions well. They just didn't give him any jokes to go with it, or like,
as the one person on this episode who has not done improv or stand-up comedy or worked in a theater on any kind of regular basis or even semi-regular basis, I have a question.
Just freelance on occasion.
And yes. Well, I valet parked cars in front of one once, but you know.
There you go. There you go.
Feel like by proxy.
So did Mark Champlin. So this is, you're almost there, Mark. According to this movie, you're almost a comedian.
Almost. I'm hoping the answer to this is yes. Is every theater run by an Eileen Brennan type manager? Please say yes.
Oh,
I
mean, we met at Improv Chicago, which at the time was run by the original owner. I found some similarities. Is how I'll put that.
I'm just hoping that I just like to imagine that the manager of a comedy club has the upper office that can stare down at the stage, is always smoking a cigarette, is generally disgruntled with the talent at all times, lives a somewhat, even though this person works in a comedy club, their personal life is in complete disarray and they're mostly depressed.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even think about how much this did fit, actually. Again, I will avoid any rumor or slander, but I will say that she would often come into the theater. She would park in the back and come in as teams were performing. And she would always come with her dogs, two dogs, and they would always follow her and were well-trained, but they were not on leashes. So she would bring them into a small comedy club and she would jingle her keys in her hand. As a nervous habit.
Yes.
So you're on stage performing and you could hear ching, 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 ching. And you're like, oh, crap. She's coming in.
So, or you would hear one of the dogs bark.
Yep. Which, you know, didn't happen a ton, but did happen.
Yeah.
I did. There was one moment in the movie where it was just eerie, where like she, at the very beginning, where she walks through and the one female comedian seems to be doing a perfectly fine job. And she's like, give her the light. And it was eerily similar to one point I was doing a show and she hadn't been in the room and she walked through with an alcoholic beverage in her hand once and then gave us notes and wanted us to cut people based on that. Like it was this, it was very like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It was,
the hatred towards female comedians and through various people in the movie, it was very real and very true. And I mean, I can't speak to it as well as probably Allie and Erica, but I certainly saw a lot of it. So that's a real thing.
Yeah.
So follow up question, which is more focused on this movie itself.
Oh, right. This movie. Okay. The Funny Farm. Right. Oh, yeah. Right. Okay. Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've seen back it. Go on.
We're all trying to get away. It's okay.
Okay, so is there a plot?
There's so much stand up randomly in the first half that it feels like in the last third they're like, oh, we need to have a plot, and there's suddenly this thing. But it seems to be as much like comedian anecdotes that have been crammed into, like, really the plot arc happens in the last 20 minutes.
It's
a good question, Mark. I don't think there is, and I agree with Allie, there isn't really a plot. To me, I think what I liked about this movie is that, I know we're not the things we love, things we hated, but I think what I liked about it was like, there's a lot of parts of the comedy world that had not changed entirely outside of the dated material and everything else that was happening. But there were certain elements of the comedy club that I think he that he got correct in terms of the comedy world. Whether or not that's an interesting film, that's for everyone else to decide. But for me, I was like, having gone through, like, you know, and performed in lots of different improv comedy clubs, I was like, well, this makes a lot of sense. Like, this is, there's a lot of true things in there. But yes, I think it's a lot of like kind of one guy's journey into comedy and his finding satisfaction or happiness therein and what seems to be a week's time. He goes through a real mm-hmm. ride in a very short period of time.
He goes through a real ride, and then it implies that he's not going to stay in comedy. Like, the announcement we hear as he's driving back to LA suggests that he's going to immediately get another sitcom, or am I confused?
Yeah. I think it seems he's like either dreaming or we're hearing the future of somebody and introducing him.
So it's like,
I kind of thought that that was him kind of going, I can do it again, because it's like that Arrested Development meme where, like, well, that doesn't work out for anyone, but maybe it will for us. That's like basically what every performer basically goes through. We're like, I just got handed a sitcom and I just walked into town and then they took it away from me. And that's a bummer, but I could probably get that to happen again. Which is like how Los Angeles runs.
It
runs with people like that. And people that have this kind of terrific set, because Mark does get a chance to get back on stage and he unleashes his wasp set in clip 3.
I don't want to play this.
It's very small.
Oh my God.
Please, thank you for cutting for television. hold on, I'm getting there. I was out of order. Okay, here it is.
You're looking at a 100% white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. Genuine wasp. Let me tell you, it's not easy being a wasp. It's not easy coming from a family that wouldn't approve of me living with a girl, even after marriage.
I mean, look, he gets a sitcom deal from this set.
From that, because he's so
actually
charming.
Actually kind of makes sense, because you look at like Tim Allen. What was Tim Allen's thing? But like, good man.
Right.
You know, like, it's just like, this is, he's found, this is his bit. I'm a wasp. Mm-hmm. That's his bit. In fact, he wakes his girlfriend up
at four
in the morning to be like, do you think it's funny if I just make tons of jokes about that? And I wondered, what if I did that to Erica?
Oh my God. Oof. If I'm asleep and you're going to wake me up to ask me if something is funny, first of all, the answer is absolutely no.
It would not go as well. She's certainly not going to hop up and be like, let's read Shakespeare. It's not going to go that well.
No, it isn't. It is not.
Well, and also, like, that was her need for a second. And he was like, no, I'll do bits instead, which is just...
Yep. I can't control myself. I'm incorrigible, but so everyone likes me. Yeah. And that's what everyone tells me.
Yeah. I do want to say, like, it's presented as this revolutionary idea. Like, I've got it. Because everyone, all the comedians in the club do have, like, I'm the black guy. I'm the Latino guy. I'm the crazy guy. Like, the,
I'm the Native American.
I'm the woman. Yes. In the early 80s, it's not like there weren't already wasp jokes. And in fact, I think there might have even been, like, joke books about wasps. Like,
It's not wild to think that he could do this set and you know, listening to it, what I did like about the performance of it is that he clearly, like, made an effort to do terribly the first time, but not so terribly that you didn't think, like, he's trying, he's just failing. Mm-hmm. And then the second time he definitely has a lot more polish, but he's still, like, Miles Chapin isn't a comedian. There's still, like, an element of, like,
he's just not. Yeah.
He's just not he's not a comedian. So the timing is a little bit off because he hasn't done this for years and years. There is something to that. But I guess that's also
what they kind of want. Ryan, I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but I don't know about you folks, but this seems like we're dipping right into things we loved. What's the deal with things we loved, guys? And what's the deal with things we hated, huh? Things we hated opposite of things we love. That's crazy. That's crazy.
That's right. We're going to talk about the things we loved and the things we hated about the Funny Farm. Mark, what is something you loved?
Let's see. I did love seeing images of the old Las Vegas Strip. Most of those hotels are gone. Mm-hmm. I would just find it like, it's so fascinating how in, you know, from 1983 to now, which I recognize is still like, what, 40 years? It's like, so much has changed. It's like, it looks entirely different. But the other thing I loved, which was the only line I laughed at, is when he gets into the improv line and says to the girl, the little girl in front of him, that isn't she too young? And she says she works old. And then an old lady gets behind him and says, I work young. And the timing of that was, I thought, the only funny mm-hmm. joke in the whole movie. And mm-hmm. maybe at that point, I was so desperate to laugh because it was 23 minutes into the movie that I found it funnier than it was.
You had a painted smile on your face just waiting, like...
Right. It's gonna happen. It's gonna happen. And then it did, and I was like, well, you charmed me, Funny Farm. Not well, that Funny Farm.
They didn't allow you the moment where Howie Mandel blows up a rubber glove on his head.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, we didn't get that.
You didn't get that. So,
well, you know, then you can't win them all.
Which I found hilarious. I watched the stand-up special back in the day.
Yeah, I remember.
Oh, boy. Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Whatever happened to that guy, huh?
What? just a misspent youth. Anyway, Allie, what did you love?
The two moments I was genuinely impressed. Now I can't remember if he's Miles or Mark, but his two successful sets, he is dressed so perfectly, like an 80s kind of handsome comedian, mm-hmm. like just chef's kiss, like the first like kind of wackily pattern, but not too wackily pattern mm-hmm. shirt plus suspenders. And then I was like, they can't top that. No, the sweater he wears for the second set was like, yeah, someone in wardrobe knew what they were doing.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yes.
Totally. Yes.
Erica, what is something you loved?
Don't hate me on this. Stay with me, folks.
Oh boy. Hold on. I got to get loose.
Everybody take a stretch, take a sip of water, stand up.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
I actually loved when the gang of comedians from the Funny Farms, gang of friends who brings Miles Mark.
Living the Chaplin, lives of comedians.
When they bring him to Vegas and they see like the old school, you know, comedian. I kind of like that scene when it all starts to fall apart.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just liked that. I liked that they would go on that road trip and be like, oh, we got to talk to him. Like, ugh, you know, I wasn't expecting that at all because it mm-hmm. had been kind of just a little bit of a mess to that point. It seemed like it was going to be sort of like just immersing you into the comedy world. And then maybe it was going to follow this one guy, like this one budding comedian. So I kind of liked that little detour to see this old school comedian who has achieved like the success that they all want, right? Like he's a working comedian. Mm-hmm. He has a butler bartender ?
Right.
That works ? For him in his hotel room. Right.
And it's also amazing because like up until then, the movie is that 80s kind of like lightly racist, but you can't be the kind of racist that the old comedian is, mm-hmm. which is just weird. Like,
yeah. I mean, this is something that I love too. I love two things I'll mention. And so first I'll mention, I'll back up this. I hate to always mention songs because we always mention songs. This one has a song at the end credits called Feelings. And it is actually co-written by Tracy Bregman, who plays Amy in this, plays the waitress.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
And she wrote it with a friend of her brother's, Joseph Williams, who is the son of composer John Williams.
Oh.
Huh. And also the lead singer of Toto.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So so here's the song, so we can hear a little bit of it.
Give it to you.
So, I mean, this has a song. Like, I feel like in the 80s, every movie, we run into so many of these movies, and I'm just, Bad Manners too, they have their own theme songs. It's wild to me that people wrote, like, well, you never know. We got to make sure we have a song just in case. And so this is a pretty good one. It's about his little trip. I'm going to make it in LA. And I mean, I don't know, kind of wild. But the other thing I really liked was what Eric was talking about, which is that scene where we sort of get to see the difference between the young and the old comedians. Mm. I felt like it was an argument that kind of still made a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Even to this day, there's just a different philosophy in terms of like, so this is, of course, Philly Beekman, who's the famous comedian father of one of the guys who just writes jokes, Sammy, who oddly doesn't come along. And anyway, things kind of go badly quickly.
You give him an inch, it winds up on a schlong. what's the matter? Is that too smart for the room?
No, I like big black schlong jokes. I think they're coming back.
Which is more than you can say for yourself.
You make me laugh. Actually, you don't make me laugh. You make me sick. All of you, you come out here, you're out in California right away. Where's the movies? Where's the contracts? Where's the big television money, huh? No sweat, no training, no friggin' tradition, no dues paid. You know what I had to do the first 20 years I was in this business? I had to work toilets, and I worked strip joints.
Which leads me to ask, what are the toilets then?
Right.
I would assume the toilets were the strip clubs, but he said, no, there was a step below, a place where people only came to see nudity, and then you had to try to entertain them, and when they didn't want to be entertained, there's something worse. I don't know what that might be.
Also, there's no toilets in strip clubs. So, didn't you know that, Ryan? Come on.
It's not that I did not recall that, but that makes a lot of sense. I can't think of what that awful gig was. I can only think it was the worst gig I ever had, which was working for the lady who ran IO. And I did a favor for somebody who she had roped into doing an improv comedy show at a park in Northern Illinois for people and their dogs. And they would bring their dogs all weekend long. And at the end, on a Sunday night, we were supposed to go into the theater and then do an improv show. And there was three of us because everybody she had asked had bailed out. She was like, please do this show with me. I was like, okay. We went up to do this show. Everybody came in to the theater. They had to either stand or sit. No chairs. Also, we're a little bit high up, and everybody has their dog with them, okay?
Dogs love comedy.
And so this other guy, it's me, my friend Linda, and this guy Sven. And, of course, we're about a minute or two in, and he decides to get down on his knees and pretend to be a dog.
Mm. Of course.
Which drives all the dogs in the place bananas.
God.
And they start barking, and they don't stop. Until Sven sort of sheepishly, he's looking at us, we're looking at him, I swear to God,
Sven,
a minute. Sven,
stand up.
He eventually, just stands up sheepishly, and we just try to move on to another scene. Because the dogs have been losing their minds, and their owner's like, calm down, for, a minute. And it was like...
You got a dog laugh, man. Ride it. Ride that wave. You got
Ryan, do you think it was a dog laugh or dog booze? Like, they were like, whoa!
They were not happy. It was not a happy...
You're not us. You are not us.
You don't get us.
Oh, yeah.
You don't get to come here to our dog theater and tell us how to live our lives.
Appreciate that caricature. Your knees are wrong.
That's not how we behave.
Yeah.
Incorrect, sir. And I remember we were led through the kitchen on our way out, and they were like, yeah, everybody, there's a big party for everybody at the camp. So they had a bunch of leftover pizza. They're like, do you want one? And the other two were like, nah. And I was like, yes. I want yes. And they gave me an entire pizza, and I drove it back home, and then I threw it away in the alley because I was like, I don't want this. But I was like, I want something. I want to walk away with something. This horrible gig.
Well, if Sven had really committed to the Andy Kaufman bit, he would have not got up and would have just rode that out for an hour and a half.
This is my thing.
Yeah,
the
dogs
are
entertained. They're going to bark for half an hour. We're going to stand up and bow, and we're going to move on. With the
that would have been hilarious.
With a cold, awful, old pizza in the back of the car. But anyway, the scene about that was such an interesting idea. And because, so it's something I love because it's about the young comedians versus the new comedians. And yet it's also what I hated, because what an opportunity for a terrific scene to really talk about the differences.
Right.
But from that clip that we played, it just goes into a tirade of him yelling at them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they sort of try to talk to him a little bit, like, you don't come see us in the club, so what do you know about us? And then he says, get out. It's sort of a squandered opportunity.
One of many. We're like, here's a shiny rock. No, we'll put that down. Just kind of a,
But like, it starts off with like, wow, this is cool. Because like Erica said, it's about a guy who's made it to the top.
Yeah.
But he's had to compromise himself a bit. And he doesn't particularly want to admit that.
Yeah.
Is the best I can offer him. But we don't really get into like the actual, the meat of what that argument really is, you know, between new, young and old comedians. So I loved it, but I hated it because it's a real squandered opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to switch to things we hated. Mark, what did you hate?
Well, what I hated, I actually also kind of loved. So we're a little bit in the same boat here. And that is, not since Felicia Rashad and Philip Michael Thomas in False Witness, have I seen a couple with worse chemistry?
Oh my God.
I couldn't believe, I couldn't believe that Mark and Amy were remotely compatible with each other or truly cared about each other. I just like, that was the most forced relationship. And maybe it's because they gave Amy nothing to work with. Like,
she was
I'll just be here and I'll drive you to your audition. And oh, wait, you want to go hang out with the boys after we both have worked all night? Yeah. Go for it. I'll just be at home practicing my Shakespeare. No big deal. I'm like, come on. No. Yeah. This is such a bullshit relationship. But it also reminded me how much I really loved Philip Michael Thomas and Felicia Rashad's relationship in False Witness. And the little kisses on the shoulder.
Oh, those kisses. The shoulder kisses. Just incredible stuff. So go back and listen to that episode, everybody, from our April sweeps.
I am writing down False Witness.
It's on YouTube. It's on YouTube.
False Witness, if I'm remembering it correctly, isn't bad.
It's a very... bad. You know, 90s TV movie. And that maybe was going to be a show. I don't know how. But anyway, Allie, what did you hate?
There's a moment in that relationship that I hate, which is he's like, hey, I'm going home. So essentially I'm breaking up with you after living in your apartment for either 6 months or a week. We're not sure which.
Yeah.
And then the only thing she screams after him is like, can't you see that you're fresh and funny? And I'm like, what? No, like, hey, asshole, we had a relationship, living in my apartment.
You can quit comedy, but also we can still live together. That's not a reflection on me.
Yeah.
You know?
But what I truly hated, there's a ritual in, God, 80s, 90s comedies, maybe today, anything where there's a group of wacky young men, there has to be a bad woman who is sexually humiliated in some way. And just like, God. And it was, I saw the preview and I thought, oh, this is going to be rough. And it was less bad than I thought it might be.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's more emotionally humiliating for her, but it is just like, ugh. And there's no punishing the guy who shot the videos of them. And they're like,
right.
Evidence free. They're like, she must have been involved. Let's humiliate her. Let's not punish him. It's just the weirdest.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They do give her a small moment, like where Mark gets in the car with her, but like,
that's my favorite scene.
Okay. Wow.
Right.
Then I won't go any further. Erica, something you hated.
Yeah. Come on. We've been like beating around the bush here. But I hated Mark Champlin's teeth. Okay. There is no way he got a television sitcom, or he got it and then they got him on camera and they were like, no, those aren't TV teeth. Okay. Those are not TV teeth.
We don't know why he loses the TV show. We were never really told a reason.
Right. We never saw a rehearsal. It was.
Yeah. Cause he was like, hey, and they're like, oh, whoa, those are not TV teeth. So this is a no go.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. He had that young kind of, like, I think Allie had said it, like, he had that young sort of handsome, you know, 80s comedian look to him.
Right.
I can see why they cast him.
Not too handsome. The part where he tells himself he has charm is just like...
In the bathroom where he's like pumping himself up before he goes on. Oh, yeah.
That moment, though, to me does not ring true, because when you're trying to, when you're about to go out and do your first comedy show and your heart is beating out of your chest and you are like sweating and you're like, oh my God. And this, in this instance, I'm talking about improv where you don't know what you're going to do, whereas he has a good sense of what he will be doing. So maybe that settles and calms the nerves, Allie. I don't know. Let me know.
Maybe.
Does it? I don't know.
No, not really. No. Yeah,
okay. So that to
because
me,
then
I'm
there's
still
something
like,
to go blank on. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. You can still forget where you are, right? And and so there's that fear is always there. And so that was like a little, like it was written out, but I felt like we didn't get that moment. Like she comes over and again, she comes over, pats him on the shoulder. You're gonna be great. And he's like, I'm gonna shit my pants or whatever. But like the beats are there. I was like, I feel like that moment is even, it's scarier. It's much more terrifying. Like you are in just a sweat. You are white as a sheet. You are like, what the fuck am I doing? But you know, I don't know.
The set I just did on Sunday, if we can go back to me.
Please.
Let's do it.
We didn't have a host between all of us. So when you were on deck, instead of being in the green room, the comedian was on stage and you were on a chair, like just off stage left, basically facing them. And it's excruciating, just kind of trying to hear them, but all you can hear is like of your own heart, just like
going through your routine, trying to be like, then I say this and then I go to that. And
I wish she would shut up so I could practice one more time, but she won't. She's on stage.
You have that painted smile on your face like Mark did through most of this movie until he got to that. All right.
Mark's so fresh. So fresh and funny, fun. Can we all just, when we're trying to pump each other up, should we describe each other as fresh?
Let's do that.
That's
a pact.
Should we bring it back? Funny and people like you.
No.
Yeah. Right?
No?
People love you.
People love you. People love you.
I thought that was her trying to say that she loved him. And he took it, him being the narcissist that he is, was like immediately like associating it to his career.
Of course.
And I was like, there was an opportunity lost. Like, this could have been a really sweet moment. And he was like, no, if they really loved me, I would have had that show. And I'm like, wait, no. Yeah. I think he kind of missed the
meaning. Yeah, missed the meaning behind it. But yeah, you're not wrong to label them narcissists, because there is a certain element of that when you're like getting into a field where it's all about you and all you can do is think about what you were going to do or what you were going to like, your jokes and all that stuff. And you get very like, you know, in your own zone.
Yeah.
And so
that's why I don't listen to any of these episodes after we record them.
I can't do it. I'm not gonna listen to me.
Gotta stay fresh.
People love me.
People love you, Mark.
Let's talk about our favorite scenes. We'll start with Allie, because we were already talking about it. Your favorite scene.
It is, because I am a longtime Eileen Brennan fan, and she's just one of those actresses where she's not an ingenue and never was, but she's so funny and she's so great. And so I'm sure it had to be hard to find jobs, like to take this job, as you said, after her almost Oscar winning turn in Private Benjamin, just like, oh my God. And so she has this, you know, wacky, oh, we humiliated her scene. And then she fucking gets in that car and gives you a real character that she has thought about. And hey, here's some real acting. And it is out of place, but I love it that she does that.
Yeah. She nails that scene for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, your favorite scene?
The exact same scene. It was, I mean, she hits
fresh,
it out of the
bro,
park.
Fresh.
Yeah.
But I think Mark, or the character Mark, he does a pretty decent job of responding to her and trying to be like, I don't know what to say. And I don't know how to make you feel better, but I do feel bad that this happened. Like it was also not nearly as good. I'm not trying to say that.
No.
But he does a fair attempt at trying to be in that moment and contribute to it. But she is just, that scene could have gone on for 5 more minutes and I would have loved every minute of it.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like the actor in that scene was like, oh, I need to take a step back and let Eileen Brennan have this, which was the smart move. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Erica, your favorite scene?
Not nearly as deep, but it really kind of, it really just like struck a chord. And that was the young guy. It's earlier on in the movie, and it's the young guy, and he's kind of running from person to person, going like, hey, I wrote a joke. I wrote a joke. And he keeps like trying jokes out on people, and they just fall flat. Mm-hmm. And no one laughs, or they're like, come on, get lost. Like, and he's like, come on, buy a joke. Like, he's trying to run around and mm-hmm. sell jokes. Was it Sammy? I'm forgetting the
Sammy.
Yeah. Sammy. Yeah. Thank
whose
you.
Dad is the Vegas comedian.
Yeah.
Right.
I really struggled. I was like, oh, you know, because I think, you know, probably the three of us have known someone like that who's just trying so hard and trying almost too hard. And they are a little maybe socially awkward, so they're not great at making those connections either. So when they do come up, you know, to a person, it's usually they're interrupting a conversation, or they're coming into kind of a group chat and saying something awkward, or, you know, because it's just them. It's just who they are. So I really liked those scenes where he would pop in and just make the like piss everyone off, and there's no reason for anyone to be mad at him.
He's just
doing his best. He's just not funny.
Right. You know? He doesn't have a napkin comedy. Polaroid. Yeah.
Yeah.
His best bit is based off of a napkin Polaroid for sure. Yeah. My favorite scene was Bruce Nutter faking his own funeral. I mean, it's not a huge laugh, but I was like, I don't know, kind of clever when he comes out of that. And we get the moment where the coffin starts to come up. Eileen Brennan's like, she's the person that notices it.
Yeah.
Which is also fitting. And like, I don't know. Again, makes perfect sense if you're going to play a character that's Andy Kaufman, that he's going to fake his own death. And he pops out and he's got like makeup on.
Death makeup on
to kind of like make his face look pale, which I'm like, it was a closed casket. That was unnecessary. Right.
What did you need to get past?
Just in case you thought somebody might lift it to take a good look, or I don't know what. Anyway, I just thought that scene was kind of fun. I was actually like, well, that's kind of funny that he, because there was a, you know, they had played the scene for, you know, they closed the club that night. They kind of played it like he really killed himself. And then it was all for a prank. And you're like, oh, okay. All right, let's go on to final questions. Here are final questions for the Funny Farm. Did books on tape not exist in the early 80s?
They must have.
They did. I remember seeing them at the library. They would come in those big, like, plastic clamshells, and there'd be a bunch of tapes.
Yeah, there's a bunch of tapes. That's right.
Yeah.
It's possible that Steve Allen invented them.
Yeah. Right. That's possible, too.
Because Mark looks at him like, you're listening to Moby Dick. Well, what? And I was like, is this right as that is just coming into vogue? I don't know. It was very strange.
It sounded like, maybe it was like he thought it was a band and didn't realize that was a book or something. Yeah, it was. It's one of many weird things where it's like, it seems like a joke should be there, but the scene just ended. That was.
And Moby Dick was a notable Serbian pop dance band. They formed in 1992,
which
though,
is probably so what I thought Steve Allen was referring to.
They saw that movie.
They started in 92, so that the timeline doesn't apply. Oh. But
got it.
Anyway,
they had started in Cleveland, though, so that it's how.
Even though they were Serbian, you know,
they moved to Cleveland just to start the idea of a band for 12 years later, and you know, anyway,
right. They got in their Chevy Nova, drove from Serbia to Cleveland, and went like, this is our Los Angeles. We'll start here.
What's the quickest you've ever moved in with someone?
I mean, I think he might have beat the timing of my freshman college dorm by a couple hours.
Like, I mean, it happens very fast.
Yes.
Yeah.
And my dorm mate, we had talked on the phone a couple of times. So,
okay. So, this is pretty quick. Pretty quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, Ryan. You tell me.
You were, the first girlfriend that I ever moved in with and lived with.
There you go.
Yeah.
Pretty quick, though. That was pretty
quick. Because we moved in officially together in a tiny studio in Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. So,
correct.
That was our trial by fire on that one.
That's right.
Mark, the quickest? Does it take you 2 days?
Well, I would have to say college dorm has got to be the fastest. I mean, there was no other fast turnaround there.
Allie, can you confirm if there are a thing called jokies? Now that you are a stand-up?
Now that I'm a stand-up. Now that I'm a terribly experienced stand-up. I was never a headliner, and I'm female. So this was like a final show for the workshop I was in. When I was doing it before, I was doing kind of very late night stuff. I can't confirm the non-existence of jokies, but I have not.
Okay.
I have not seen them.
Okay. Fair enough.
I have seen stand-ups date way above their...
Their weight class,
yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, the world of comedy, much like it's larger. Like, that's the other thing. This movie has like what seems like a lot of comedians, but in actuality, like, there's not enough. Like, you know, there's
yeah.
Especially since it's set in Los Angeles, you're like, we're seeing these like 8 or 9, but there's actually like 40 that are really here on a regular basis, and then a bunch of others that kind of come in and out. But like, there's tons. And so, the pool, and since you see each other all the time, is very small. So sometimes there's be like, they're going out. How did he? All right. Anyway, have you ever filled your resume with fake credits?
No. And then that's the other thing. They're like, oh, he's not an actor, but we saw a scene where he filled his resume with fake acting credits. Like,
right. So they apparently didn't buy that, I guess.
I guess. I don't even think.
When I was starting out as an actor, that I even filled it with fake credits.
You hear stories like the young guy who was the producer on Murphy Brown claims that he went to Hollywood with a completely fake resume. But is that an actor story, or is that? And I don't know why I remembered that bit of Hollywood lore. Yeah,
right.
I'm sure people do it. I'm a nervous enough of a rules follower that I'm like, what if they check? What if they call somebody?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Same.
I know I've left things off of my resume.
Oh yeah.
Like work resumes and stuff. Like
what
jobs you had for like a day or two didn't quite work out.
I know of at least one story where someone who had understudied a role put that they were the lead role in a play and the casting director knew who had actually played the lead. Like it.
Oh.
Yeah. It doesn't end well when it happens. No. Kids, okay, don't do it. It seems wacky.
Seems like you need it, but you know, sometimes you just need to tell it. So people love those fresh young faces.
They do.
They love to hire them. To fire them. Anybody else? And anybody else ever pad the resume with something false outside of the outside of the skills section? In which case, we're all scraping the bottom of the barrel for things.
There was a time, kids, you could put drive a manual stick shift in your skills section, and that was
and it was legit. It's actually more legit than ever,
right? They can't anymore.
A very odd skill that would be like, oh wow, you can.
Yeah. Well, I think might have now used for that. It's not a skill per se, but Mark has a new icebreaker in that. That reveal on if you used to call for the time, you could scream your phone number into it and then people could call you back. I mean, that's
amazing. As long as
the icebreaker is only with people 50 years old and up.
I literally called that line and only had an AB kind of relationship where I never thought of the utility of that phone call. Outside of it purely giving me the time. And I was that's it.
Same. I need the time. I'm reeling from this information.
You didn't realize it was actually a porthole into space and time that you could use to your advantage.
There would be other people on the... I mean, never thought beyond the basic utility of it. All right. Well, let's get into some research. As Mark mentioned earlier, this was shot in Montreal, Canada. And not Los Angeles.
I had it as Quebec, but
Quebec is the territory, right? And all right, Montreal is the town.
Okay, so you're both
as
right.
Long as you're saying not wrong, are you crunching the numbers on Canada?
No.
How many provinces do they have? Quick.
I feel like we do have to get it right because our episode on The Great Land of Small, which is a Canadian film, was included on the Blu-ray disc. So like. We kind of, and with Night Zoo and,
we still talking about Night Zoo?
We're still talking about
Night Zoo.
Reno and the Doc. Like, we kind of are a low-key Canadian podcast, so I just want to make sure we get our facts. Anyway, it was shot on a budget of $3 million in 1980. This was originally going to be made. Yeah. Originally going to be.
Dude, this, someone pocketed $1 million at least.
Oh, wait till you hear how they get the money. Anyway, originally this was going to be made by Paramount. Wow. But Ron Clark, they disagreed about the script. So he said they wanted to make it Animal House and I wanted something else. I told them I couldn't write the script they suddenly wanted, and I took the project with me to Montreal. He also said something about the fact that they also wanted him to work more on like the romance aspect of the movie. Mm-hmm.
Like at all.
Which I say, you completely killed it. What do you mean you got to write more?
Right. They needed more shoulder kisses, and there was none in this movie.
They needed a shoulder kiss. And just needed one. You only needed one scene of it.
I would have liked it if you had leaned in out of your frame and into Ryan's frame just to plant a little.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
Yeah, amazing.
But that does kind of explain, I'm sorry, there are like three scenes where it's just the comedians being assholes to bystanders and each other. And maybe that's the attempt to make it more Animal House.
Yeah. There's like a montage of stuff, which is how Mark ends up getting the opportunity to actually get on stage and do his Wasp material. Is because there's like the other guys are just pulling a bunch of hijinks around town and eventually pull a prank that involved the cops, and it delays them from getting to the club. So almost my favorite scene, almost. So he takes it to Montreal to Film Plan International, who financed the film. It's a Montreal company headed by producer Pierre David, who's one of the executive producers. He also worked with David Cronenberg on The Brood and other films. He also had a production company called Mutual, which he partnered with Roger Corman's New World Pictures to create New World Mutual in Canada. And that's how they distributed a lot of other films as well as.
Insurance company.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It sounds like it. They financed the film using public offerings, which were seen as affordable due to the tax incentives at the time and by the Canadian Film Development Corporation. At the time, it was the biggest single film investment package in Canadian history because they were financing several films, including the aforementioned 1981's Gas with Howie Mandel and Peter Aykroyd. They also were financing 1982's Visiting Hours, originally called The Fright, which was directed by Jean-Claude Lord, the director of Cover Girl for New World, which was also financed by Film Plan International. An advertisement of the offering that I found that was from October 1980 called Funny Farm, at the time called Comics, was the original title. It called it a gripping comedy drama. Also, another title, it was also called Give Me a Break before it was called Comics.
I get it.
By the way, by January...
Till Nell Carter showed up on set.
By January 1981...
That's a joke just for the olds.
I don't know. Was that your impression, Mark? Pretty funny. Pretty hilarious.
He just said the title of a show in a certain kind of cadence, and it made me laugh. By January 1981, all the shares for Film Plan had been purchased. So they made all of this money, which was somewhere like, I think, about $14.5 million, which they spread around these movies. I think they spent the most on Gas, which did get picked up by, I believe, Paramount. So I think that's why the connection was there.
I'm worried about those Canadians getting their money back.
Well, yes, good call, because Gas was not a success. And a year later, there were changes to the rules and the tax code, so that kind of tax shelter stuff at that time then sort of went under. $6.5 million for Gas, by the way, and it made just under three in the U.S. So, but at the time, I believe it was picked up by Paramount, and they were trying to, at that point, at the very earliest stages of home video, that's where they were putting it out on. Like the earliest VidDisc units. So like we're talking before Beta, before VHS.
Wow.
So that money sort of runs out, and so Film Plan International sort of at that point sort of dissolves. This is like in 82. So before this movie even comes out. And Pierre David has moved to the U.S. And is in Los Angeles, starting a new company at that point in time called Mutual Productions, which is where they eventually make Dreamworld, a.k.a. Cover Girl, which is released by New World Pictures as well. So they started shooting in November 4th, 1980, I imagine somewhere into December, maybe probably mm-hmm. around the time that poor John Lennon was then shot and they had to make all those changes. So the film sort of lingers and doesn't get purchased, doesn't go anywhere. Eventually it is at some point in time. I don't know exactly why, but it's changed from comics to The Funny Farm, which frankly makes a little bit more sense as a title.
But it pooches a later joke.
I suppose so. Tracy Bregman on the Blu-ray says that they had to change the name because of a movie that was called Comics, or she says it's called it was called Comic, but the title was Comics. There was a movie called The Comic, which is a movie with Dick Van Dyke, and I think it was done by real-time research, Carl Reiner. Yes, so he directed it. Carl Reiner, of course, being a very good friend, and also in the very beginning of this movie, doing the Thousand-Year-Old Man routine with Mel Brooks. They were very good friends for their entire lives, for all of Carl Reiner's life. So maybe there was some reverence to Carl Reiner making the comic, but that was a movie in 1969. I can't imagine calling the movie Comics was in any sort of conflict, but I don't know. I don't know why they changed the name. There's no idea. But anyway, it becomes The Funny Farm. And Roger Corman steps up to make it because he started to work in Canada, starting to make plans to make screwballs in Canada. And so in September of 1982, he picks up a few movies to distribute through New World, Canadian films like Bells, a.k.a. Murder by Phone, which he does mm-hmm. release. The comedy Utilities, which stars Robert Hayes of Airplane.
Wow.
And The Funny Farm. According to the Philadelphia Daily News, Funny Farm was supposed to be released in October 1982. It wasn't. And then Roger Corman sells New World Pictures at the top of 1983. However, The Funny Farm gets released late February in Tennessee and in Canada in March of 1983, eventually opening in Los Angeles in May 20th, 1983. So whether or not there were plans in place for this to come out already that Corman had when he sold the company, or whether or not the new owners were like, we got to put out something and this is what you got on the shelf. So that's how they put out Funny Farm. They eventually dump Utilities as well, because they're just whatever you got. There's also a movie, I think he called The Prey. They had a few movies around that Corman had. And of course the movies that Corman was making, like Screwballs, they needed something to put out. So that's how this gets out there.
Wow.
And arrives on video in late winter spring of 1984 on Thorn EMI video, because there was no New World Video until 1985. Another little factoid, the assistant to the director was Denise DeNovi, who would go on to produce Heathers and worked with Tim Burton on a variety of films and is still producing and directing things to this day. So but she gets her start through New World, but initially as an assistant to the director of this. However that happens, I would hopefully one day we'll talk to her and we'll find out. But that's it. That is The Funny Farm.
Wow.
This
wow.
is, I can't, I hopefully you've learned more about a movie you've never known existed.
Well, and I want to thank you all for giving me that extra 90 minutes to go and watch The Right Funny Farm. Thank you for being patient.
That's fine.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I'm sorry I screwed that up.
Recording this episode has taken us 5 hours, but it's been worth it.
It's been worth it.
It's worth it. Definitely worth it.
Oh, I got to do another rewatch while Mark was watching it.
That's right. So we all rewatched
You're
it
welcome.
Again.
You're welcome.
Lying quietly on my floor, just exhausted.
Watch this movie. Go see it on Tubi. Allie Davis, thank you so much for coming and talking to us about The Funny Farm. The movies we have opened up to you.
Each one has been a treasure in its own way, and I appreciate you having me back.
Of course.
And continuing this vendetta.
Perhaps now your penance has been paid. Your sins have been absolved. And the next one's going to be a real walk in the park.
No, it won't be.
I will tell you, definitely the next movie that you come back for will be something released by New World Pictures. That's all I can promise. But where would you like people to find you if you want people to find you out there on the socials?
Right now, I do not have another. Much as you are like a Beowulf set, I want to hear it. I don't have one scheduled right now.
Okay.
I perform at the Fanatic Salon every now and then with a group called Improv Famous. Okay. So you can look for me there. It's very fun.
Cool. And hopefully stand up around the Los Angeles area sometime hopefully, soon.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some good places that are popping up now that, you know, people
definitely are
opening up. There's new places. All places closed and new places have sprung up. So
I will say my most recent set was at the Ice House, which does they put on a lovely show. They claim to be the oldest comedy club in the United States, but in
Pasadena. Yeah, it's Pasadena, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is, I started the workshop there because it was such a great place to go watch comedy.
Oh, so yeah. Cool. Oh,
there's an unsolicited plug. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. This episode brought to you by the Ice House, huh, guys? Come on. For us, it's very simple. If you want to learn more about the podcast, go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. And that's where you can find all of our episodes. Our t-shirts, buy a t-shirt. I have a t-shirt, one of our t-shirts. Nice. You can buy them there. You can look at articles, old episodes. That's where you can find all of our socials there. So you can go all in one place. So it's just that simple. And we hope you're going to stick around for more of our ha-ha-gest content as we round in through all of the comedies of New World Pictures. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.